Fans give us their apologies.
Thank you, Chair. Following apologies, Mayor Nobanda, who due to party commitments is unable to attend the meeting. Mayor Kada is sick leave. And then we also received an apology from the Minister of Energy, Mr. Lebe, who's attending the burial of the late Chief Justice Langa and Mrs. Langa in Durban, Chair. Those are the apologies. Of the Chief Justice Langa, Chair, and Mrs. Langa in Durban.
Not supposed to hear that Honorable Matlana. He meant to say that the brother of the former Chief Justice Langa and Mrs. Langa, the brother. He is being rebuilt. There's nothing wrong with you. There's nothing wrong with the brother, Honorable Matlana. So I'm sure Honorable Member Matlana would know. I think I read about this matter several times in the news this past week and a half. So you should know. So the brother is being reburied. So when Honorable Quarter made the remarks he made there, you should have heard the comments from the brother, Mandalang, with regard to calling people names. Yes, at that point they also spoke about his reburial. So he's been reburied. The minister himself did call honorable members to indicate that precisely because he had last week he wasn't here and he had assured us that he will be here today. So when this happened during the course of the week, he called, and the reason is he was one of the last persons who were with the brother of the Chief Justice when he passed on. So he helped him with the family today. So I had accepted my advice on your behalf. So any further apologies, Mr. Gordon? So, I will give my few minutes of introductory remarks to the DG of Energy on behalf of the Minister to tell us how we're going to introduce this big contingent. DG.
Good morning, Honorable Chairperson of the Portfolio Committee on Energy, Honorable Members of the Committee, colleagues, members of the public present. Thank you, Chair. The contingency plan is quite in place for your presentation. The officials are mainly based locally. As you know, that we have two offices that are operating from Cape Town, which is PetroSA and SFF. But I would like to hand over to the Chairperson representing the SF group, maybe to conduct the introductions, but most of them are based locally. Honorable Chairperson.
Send the Chairperson of SF.
Of SFF, who is also a board member of SF.
Oh, the Chairperson of SFF. Strategic Fuel Fund.
Yes,
yes. Yes,
thank you, Honorable Chair. for the invitation of the self-group to come and do a presentation today to the honorable members of the committee. I also would just want to extend a further apology of the chairperson of SEF, who is unable to make it here to today because of an emergency. My theme is quite deep. I'm sure we'll start from the DD, but my name, starting with me, my name is Neville Mompati. I am a member of the board in the Central Energy Fund. I'm also chairing the Strategic Fuel Fund, the SFF. I'm sure we can start from the Director General and go down with the introduction. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. Let me introduce the Director General. He'll reshuffle you.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members of the Committee. My name is Thabane Zulu. I work for the Department of Energy as a Director General.
Good morning, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members, DG. I'm Tshidiso Maqhubela. I am here as a member of the board of SEF. I also work as a Deputy Director General responsible for petroleum regulation in the Department of Energy. Thank you.
Good morning.
Please just introduce yourself as one after the other.
Thanks, Chair. Good morning, Chair and the Honourable Members. My name is Sakio Makanya, Acting Group CEO of SEF.
Good morning, Honourable Chairperson and the Members. My name is Ofuno. I work for CEF as the CFO.
Good morning, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. My name is Jim Besner. I'm a SEF Board Non-Executive Director and also Chairperson of the Group BAC Audit and Risk Committee. Thank you.
Good morning, Honourable Members of the Portfolio Committee. I'm Lindy Wemigwe, Acting Chief Executive Officer of the Petroleum Agency South Africa.
Good morning, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. I'm Olivia Munns and I'm the CFO at the Petroleum Agency.
Good morning, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members, and I submit the interim chairperson,
Mr. President. Honourable Chair, Honourable Members, good morning. My name is Bongani Saitini. I'm the Acting CEO of PetroSA.
Good morning, Chair, Honourable Members. My name is Alice Fata, Acting CFO for PetroSA.
Good morning, Chair. Good morning, Members. My name is Michael Nene. I am responsible for operation at Petra SA.
Good morning, Chair. Good morning, Members. My name is Kailo Sikakane from African Exploration, a subsidiary of SEF. I'm General Manager for Corporate Strategy and Planning.
Good morning, Chair. Good morning, Members. My name is Lenge Tupana. I'm responsible for risk and compliance at SEF.
Good morning, Chair. Good morning, Members. My name is Abdul Hafiji. I'm the Company Secretary at CEF.
Good morning, Ibrahim Hendricks from Petroleum Agency Company Secretary.
Good morning, Members. I'm Kelly Vitelli, a member of the public and a candidate to train here at National Assembly.
Good morning, Chair.
No, the last gentleman, please speak into the mic.
Good morning, Chair, and good morning. I'm a member of the public and candidate attorney at Ashland Attorneys, Theander Buteli.
Good morning, Chair. Good morning, members. My name is Odoi Turambo. I'm the Vice President for Trading and Marketing in Petro SA.
Good morning, Chair, and good morning, members. My name is Lombolelo Tandela. I'm the Head of Internal Audit at Petro SA.
Good morning, Chair, and honorable community members. My name is Otoni Selandu. I'm the Manager for Strategy at Petro SA.
Good morning, Chair and members. My name is Linda Mene. I look after health and safety professionals.
Good morning, Chair, honourable members. My name is Marlene Tukumalo, and I'm the company secretary for Petro Mesa.
Good morning, Chair and members. I'm Mobango Bok, manager in the office of the CEO. Petro Mesa.
Good morning, Chair and honourable members. My name is Chekima Sharp, responsible for communication and SERF.
Good morning, Chair. Good morning, all honourable members. My name is Lula Mantavati, legal counsel at SFF.
Zibuyile Ngongwa, SFF Association.
Good morning, Chairperson. It's Carol Payton from Business Day.
Wendell and Freuders.
I'm Kim Cousy for Engineering News and Mining Weekly today.
DJ Winterbach from PMG.
Trends continue to reshape the energy landscape and rattle established entities like the CEF Group. Energy industry value pools are beginning to move towards new ways of doing business and redefining a new global energy future. In the traditional asset-driven world, established energy companies like ourselves are scrambling to cope with ever-growing volatility, uncertainty, complexity and ambiguity, manifested in changes in policy shifts, funding constraints, required skills, and agile players in the sector, collaboration and technological advancements, and the rapid adoption of new renewable energy. The relentless focus on growth in the energy sector is juxtaposed with continued pressure on margins as well as high fixed costs, especially in oil and gas markets. These are some of the critical changes that we as a SEF group are actually grappling with, which calls for radical change in terms of our current business models as well as some of our operating models. And taking into consideration that if we understand some of the key changes that are required to make some of the changes towards new territory, fundamental changes must take place within the SEF group itself. Chairperson, the SEF group 2017-18 annual performance is a good story to tell in a challenging operating environment. It's a good story to tell amid key rapid industry changes. It's a good story to tell compared to previous financial years and the litany of changes that we've come to present to this committee in the past. However, it's a story that must change to one of strategic relevance and the creation of a high-performance organization that delivers shareholder value to not only its shareholder, the DOE, but also the South African public at large. It's also going to be a story of how we move from where we are to operational excellence and creating new opportunities for the SEF group as well as the country. Chair, moving through to slide 4 is a summary of the group business performance for the year under review. We thought that we would just provide the context before we go into the details of our mandate as well as of our strategy. But overall, Chair, the group reported a net profit after tax of $354 million compared to a net loss after tax of $621 million in the prior year. And these substantial improvements were largely attributed to the improvement in gross margin, cost reduction, high investment income, and the reduction in the rehabilitation and the decrease in income tax. When we get to the financial section, Chair, the CFO will unpack, I think, some of those components. But however, I think this is not enough. And when we go through the way forward, we'll unpack what it is that we are going to do, to even make this business performance much better. In terms of transformation, Chair, we did considerably well, but much more work needs to be done. The SEF group supports the principles and priorities of performance against the BBBEE codes and codes of practice of the DTI and other relevant charters in our industry, such as the mining charter, as a way of addressing historical challenges and facilitate social development. The group's transformation in future will be monitored by the Social and Ethics Committee, while employment equity is prioritized and monitored by the SEF Group Human Capital Committee, which is responsible for transformation in the workplace. Out of the elements of transformation, Chair, ownership, I think we still continue to challenge. That's purely based on the type of structure that we have. Management, there's still a lot of work that needs to be done there. Employment, we've got quite a number of initiatives in place to improve employment equity. And we've done quite a number of things in relation to the skills development of the group in terms of bringing in graduates in training and as well as the training that we have at our academy down in Mossel Bay. Through PetroSA, we've done considerable amount of undertaking quite a number of initiatives in relation to ESD. And through AE, socio-economic development, and PetroSA, as well as initiatives that we must still implement in relation to economic development. From a stakeholder engagement, Chair, our stakeholder engagements were largely geared to support the group in relation to growth and sustainability initiatives for the group, especially for PetroSA, as well as growth initiatives for our subsidiary you know, the African Exploration Mining and Finance Corporation. In terms of shape, no safety concerns, especially in our mining business, but we did have a number of challenges, you know, in PetroSA, and this has been prioritized in this current financial year, and going forward with a number of initiatives such as the stand down and boots for safety, where the organization comes to a standstill to observe you know, safety moments. From a financial perspective, revenue 11.7 billion, which is about 9.47 higher than, you know, prior year. Net profit after tax 354 million, 157% better than prior year. OPEX continued to develop 2.6 billion, and CAPEX 285 million, lower than prior year, and that's purely because of a weak project pipeline where we have not invested a lot in terms of CAPEX as well as some of our capital projects, but we continue to hold 717.2 billion, you know, in cash, which is 10% higher, you know, than prior year. In terms of performance against objectives at a high level, Chair, as a SAFE group, we have, you know, 13 key objectives that we set ourselves to deliver on during the period under review of the 13. Two were not achieved, two partially achieved, and seven were achieved, and we'll unpack that when we get to the scorecard as to why some of those elements of the scorecard were not achieved and why some were partially achieved. In terms of top senior management and our demographics, Chair, is an area that we admit that we are failing, but through the group's employment value proposition, we've got plans afoot to address you know, the current top and senior management demographics to improve the 27% in terms of senior leadership figure that you see, you know, to a, you know, to a number that is much higher than that, and that's going to form part of our employee value proposition initiatives. Irregular and fruitless and wasteful expenditure, there's been improvement on, you know, in that space, Chair, and we will unpack that in a couple of slides going forward when the CFO takes us through. But largely, I mean, the bulk of it relates to SFF, AD, and PetroSA, and you'll see a gradual decline from, you know, from the previous years, which is testimony to some of the initiatives by management from a control perspective. Chair, move on to the next slide in relation to the group's CSI initiatives. It's part of our quest to become a corporate citizen and a significant player in the energy sector. We undertook a number of CSI initiatives. The list is not exhaustive, Chair, with a total spend of about 98 million. And going forward, there's commitment across the group that this will increase, and it will focus on the key focus areas of community development, education, environment, health, sustainable development, as well as you know, youth employment, you know, and women. Some key highlights, Chair, slide six, some of our projects. So, you know, one of the key CSI initiatives that we undertook during the period under review was the extension of the Delmeda Clinic in the Western Cape, which is really about, I think, access to health care. The refurbishment and construction of roads in Mpumalanga, that's very much linked to our mining operations in Mpumalanga through the African Exploration and Mining Finance Corporation, and ensuring that our people have got access to various amenities and that we have roads and suitable houses for our people. It's one of the things that we did over and above the construction of the roads. We also built houses you know, in Mpumalanga. Slide seven, Chair. We also embarked on a safe back to school campaign, and we have partnered with our shareholder, the DOE, and it's an initiative that has proven to be successful, where we try to bring dignity to a number of scholars by providing school shoes as well as other back-to-school utensils such as calculators and, you know, and stationery. And this is a nationwide program, Chair, where we are earmarking those schools that I need right across the country. Also donated blankets to residents of Alexandra after a devastating fire, and we refurbished the Holy Cross Nursery and Preschool in celebration of Mama Albertina Sisulu centenary. Chair, that's just, I think, a high level, just as some of our, you know, group CSI initiatives. And with your permission, Chair, was, you know, we came here to present the 2017-18 financials. I think it would be prudent that we also maybe just go through some of the audit outcomes and as well as provide input around. So what is it that management is doing to address some of the AG findings and be able to give this committee assurance that you know, management is doing all that they can to address some of the issues that have been raised by the AG. And with your permission, Chair, if I can ask my CFO to lead us on that.
Thanks. We are now moving to slide 9. Slide 9 gives a depiction of the audit outcomes for the SEF group over the last 3 years. So the audit outcomes, when you look at it at high level, it has remained more or less the same. It's unqualified audit opinion. And then AG has also raised some concerns around the audit. What do we need to do to improve our audit outcome so that it can maybe become a clean audit? And one of the issues that was raised mainly around the financial statements that are being submitted, that the version that is submitted in May is different from the one in July because of the changes that are picked up. And then there's concerns around the supply chain, mainly around the irregular foodless. But when you look at it in detail, there's some improvement. So those are some of the key issues that they've raised. And then on the other side, they say from the financial perspective, the group is healthy, as the CEO already indicated. So we are able to pay our debts when it comes due. And we are still able to generate a profit. And then they also highlight the part around human resource, that we do have people who are well trained to execute. Moving to slide 10. So slide 10 tries to highlight some of the issues that AG had raised in our audit report. So the first one is around IT. How then do you improve? This is mainly around the approval of policies for the group, that we need to have one common policy that addresses IT, as IT is becoming a key issue in this space. And this matters. We are already on a process where we are reviewing the policies and we are updating them. So next year we hope not to report the same issues. So this will have been resolved, and the team is busy with that. Then the next slide talks to the other findings that AG had raised, mainly around how then do we improve on the quality of the information, what do we do to improve the issue of compliance with PFMA, which mainly deals with irregular and fraudulent and wasteful expenditure. So the first part around the quality of reporting. So one of the initiatives that we have introduced as a SEF group, we have established a forum called the CFO Forum, so that we can all meet and align, because we are quite a diverse group. Each entity has got its own board, but when we report, we need to report as one entity. So that forum, we hope that is going to assist us in aligning and also improving the quality of information that we have. And then we are also planning to start reporting a bit earlier, because if you report earlier, you're able to detect errors and then correct as we go. And then around compliance, one of the issues that was raised by AG was the issue of consequences management. So in that, so this committee that Treasury has recommended, which is called the loss control function, so we've established that committee is going to investigate why we didn't comply, where we didn't comply, and then where we find that people have transgressed, then there need to be issue of consequences management. But one of the other key issues that was raised sharply was around the investigations around strategic stock. So that part, we did do the investigation, but unfortunately the report was only completed after the audit, so AG raised it as a key issue. But we believe that we have got enough controls to deal with it. Most of them are being handled internally. In terms of capacity, I think there's a detailed plan explaining what do we do to improve in terms of the leadership. It should be covered in the later slides.
Are you giving him to take over?
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I think the next slide is just really just providing an overview of the SEF group as well as some of the prevailing conditions in the year under review. So some, especially I think in terms of who we are, Chair, I'll really go quite quickly and take it as read, but I think it's maybe just key just to remind the committee members of some of the critical elements around our mandate, the vision and the mission, you know, of the SEF group. Our mandate is derived from the SEF Act, 1977, but really I think our mission is to be a leading diversified energy company that provides sustainable energy solutions. And when we unpack the way forward, Chair, in terms of the plans afoot, become quite clear what it is that we want to achieve in the short to medium and long term to achieve that particular vision and how we want to grow from a mission perspective, you know, of our footprint in the energy sector, as well as extract value along the energy value chain. But core to our role is to contribute to the security of energy supply, be a strategic partner to the Department of Energy, the Schedule 2 entity, be financially sustainable, and so that we can be able to support some of government's broader initiatives in relation to the NDP from a developmental perspective, but also be a catalyst and pioneer various initiatives in technology advancement in relation to future energy needs. Slide 14, Chair, just helps to remind us of the complexities of of our energy value chain. Starting from upstream all the way to downstream, where upstream is capital intensive, it's risky, and we've been to this committee before on some of the challenges that we have faced before in relation to our upstream activities. But it's also an opportunity where the country can be able to really monetize some of the value that resides there and really provide game-changing opportunities and create much-needed employment, I think, for the country. Downstream, it's really more driven around operational efficiency. And also when you look at the future downstream or the marketing side, we are seeing that space being occupied more by traders because of the industry attractiveness, I think, in the space, and it being highly competitive. In terms of what we're doing in relation to the AE, in energy projects in the value chain, we are looking at opportunities for diversification and beneficiation, as well as various opportunities for transitioning to clean coal. in line with with global changes. But we'll unpack a lot of those initiatives, Chair, in our way forward and the group strategy going forward. But it was just important, Chair, just to provide an overview of where we play as a SEF group. We play right across the energy value chain, upstream, midstream, downstream, and we're represented all over. But also just the appreciation of the challenges that exist, or the inherent challenges that exist in the value chain. Slide 15 changes an overview of the legislative framework. It's not an exhaustive list, but we also just wanted to highlight, I think, some key ones have an impact on our industry, especially the MPRDA, the IRP, what sits in the IRP, and in relation to renewables and some of the initiatives that we'll be pursuing from a SEF group perspective. Some of the prevailing conditions, Chair, they are under review from a global perspective. I think the geopolitics were some of the areas that we continue to watch, because those had an impact on the movement of crude oil prices. So the tensions in the U.S. and North Korea, the war in Syria, those had fundamental impact on our business, especially in the oil and gas space. The Brent crude oil price movements, decisions by OPEC to extend production cuts, and what that did to the oil prices, shifts in government policy, especially in relation to renewables, where you saw most governments really pushing the renewables agenda, with a number of countries pushing for electric vehicles. And so it gets us to think quite broadly as to how should we react as a SEF group in relation to all those global trends. And of course, the financial markets also played a key role. I think locally, largely the economy, whether it was the contracting, us moving to a technical recession, but those had impact on some of our targets in terms of being able to create the much needed jobs, but we also found that there was a squeeze in our downstream business. And operationally, Chair, although it was a good year, we did experience a number of operational challenges, especially at PetroSA, in relation to the reduced indigenous gas levels, the reliability of the facility in Mossel Bay, as well as issues relating to the coal quality and us being able to meet the agreed tonnage at mining at AE. We also had leadership changes, both within the group and also with our shareholder, with a number of ministerial changes. But we also undertook a group strategy review that provided us with key guidelines in terms of where we should play, going forward. Chair, in terms of the SEF group business performance against predetermined objectives, moving to slide 18. Just a summary of our scorecard, which I've alluded to, I think, earlier on, with for the 13 key objectives, two not achieved, four partially achieved, and then the rest was achieved. So some of our key performance areas, Chair, so commercial viability. I think this is a key measure where we measure key financial targets, profitability, solvency, and then included there is the issue of growth. Profitability and solvency, those targets were achieved, although we had challenges with one of our subsidiaries in terms of growth, but as a group, we were able to achieve our profitability and solvency targets, and the CFO has spoken to that we are solvent, we are able to meet all our obligations as and when they become due. Challenge of the growth projects as to why we're not able to meet those. It's largely because most of our projects have long lead times. So whether we are looking at a drilling campaign or looking at developing a new mine, it does not happen within one financial year. There's quite a number of activities that must take place, getting the relevant approvals in place. And we've developed a group-wide process in terms of how we can streamline business development and how we can try to fast-track the issue of from identifying the opportunity, developing it all the way through to the actual execution. Strategic projects, Chair, those continue to be a work in progress. Some are only now being implemented now because again of the internal delays in terms of approvals, and transformation continue to be work in progress. In other areas, whether it's skills, we continue to do well, but a lot of work is required in that space. And as I alluded to earlier on, the group EVP or employee value proposition is designed to help us address the issues of employment equity across the group. Slide 19, Chair, because of governance and internal controls and operational excellence, we're able to meet, I think, those targets. And that's really largely due to a number of initiatives that were spearheaded by management in response to, I think, some of the negative business performance, but also some of the negative perceptions out there, and how we then begin to have the fit for purpose governance structures that can ensure that going forward we're able to arrest any lapses in control and be able to deliver on some of the operational initiatives. Human capital, the development of the employee value proposition to address the employment equity, but included in the EVP chair are quite a number of programs that are designed to also to move the group's core capabilities and skill in line with the fourth industrial revolution. So we're already looking at what are some of the potential skills that we could require in the future in a changing landscape. And then partially achieved change was around the external operating environment in relation to our initiatives around brand equity and how we can begin to profile the SEF group from a negative perspective, but also a strategic play in the market that is able to be able to go beyond just the security of energy supply. Chair, that's just the high-level summary of the group's balanced scorecard, summarizing the 13 key objectives, 2 not met, 4 partially achieved, and the rest have been achieved. And we continue to, I think, keep progress in some of these, Chair. Chair, with your permission, I'd like to ask the CFO to take us through the financials and then maybe unpack some of the components in the group scorecard, as well as unpack the business performance of each entity, so HSA, SFF, AE, and so forth, and be able to provide us some context as to how these entities fared during the period under review.
I'll go to slide 21. Slide 21 gives an overview of the SEF group. Basically, we have got 6 main entities that are operational, which is basically the holding company that people call Central Energy Fund. Then we have got PetroSA, SFF Strategic Fuel Fund, AEMSC, iGas, and then we've got PASA, and then the other bit is a bit of a renewable, but those ones are not active, so I will focus on the key entities. So when we look at slide 21, as the CEO already indicated, so the group reported a profit of 354 million rand. That profit, when you look at the presentation, it comes mainly from Strategic Fund, Bank, which reported 241 million rand. Then African Exploration, which reported 64 million rand. IGAS, which reported 348, and then followed by PASA, which reported 38 million rand. But PASA is not an operational entity, so because it relies on the government grant. But these five entities, they are expected to fund themselves. And then the results were weighed down by PetroSA's results. PetroSA reported 382 million rand. And so the whole, because PetroSA reported the loss, then the holding company had to reduce its investment in PetroSA. And the holding company has got a loss of 363. But when you remove the PetroSA impairment in the holding company then reports a profit of 150 million rand. So that's how the group looks. So the main entity that struggled to deliver is PetroSA. But when you look at PetroSA this year compared to last year, it has improved. So last year it had a bigger loss, close to 1.1 billion, and this year it has gone down to 382. I will go into the reasons later on why the performance has improved. Slide 22 then goes into the details for the group. Slide 22, we start by seeing the profit, as we explained earlier, is mainly as a result of improved gross margin. But for us, improved gross margin means that the oil price is higher than last year. That's what it means. And because when the oil price is higher, then PetroSA is able to make more money. And when the oil price is low, then PetroSA can't make enough money. And in PetroSA, there is basically two entities. There's PetroSA South Africa, which has got, which processes gas and also processes imported feedstock, which is called condensate. And then there's PetroSA Ghana, which is just pure crude. So that entity, when the oil price goes up, the performance really improves a lot because it's dependent on that. While the local entity, when the oil price goes up, sometimes you find that the cost of feedstock also goes up, so the performance doesn't improve much. So the main driver of the improved performance is mainly coming from PetroSA Ghana. So that's what that first part talks about. Basically, our gross profit improved from 5% to 10%, and that's where the numbers are coming from. And that comes from PetroSA Ghana and a little bit of PetroSA South Africa. Then the next item, when you look at our operating profit, which is the line that we should use to measure commercial entities, that number moved from 960 million rand, which was the number that was reported last year, to 973. It increased a bit, and the main reason for that is because there were some impairments of the assets in PetroSA, and those impairments were a net of 290 million rand. So that's where it comes from. The other key point that we would like to highlight is when you strip out the accounting entry, which is called the notional interest, the performance of the group then moves from the 353 million rand that we reported to 793 million rand. So when you look at the things that are normally within management control, the performance has really improved a lot compared to last year. Because last year, when you look at the same basis, it was still going to be a loss of 86 million rand, but this year it's a profit of 793 million rand. So there's a lot of work that was done to improve the performance. Then moving on to slide 23. So in slide 23, we then report where the money comes from. We then say, when you look at the first group in terms of most of the money comes from investment income. So we received 1 billion rand through interest, and this comes from the cash balance that we have, about cash of 17 billion rand. And then we also received 356 million rand, which is called income from associates or equity accounted investment. This number basically refers to our investment in Romco pipeline. So we own 25% of that pipeline, so the investment has been doing quite well for us as a SEF group, and continues to perform well. Then we go into the number, talking to the finance cost. Basically, the finance cost for us ideally is supposed to be the interest that you pay to the bank. However, the accounting standard requires you to put more than what you pay to the bank. So the money that was paid to the bank relating to the loan is 47 million rand. But we have got a total finance cost of 574. And the bulk is 440 million rand that comes from what is called notional interest. So that is just an accounting adjustment. You haven't paid money to anyone. And then we have interest on the lease, which is 79 million rand. But when you look at our finance cost, the number that matter is the interest on borrowings, which is the reserve-based lending at PetroSA, and the lease at PetroSA was 79 million rand. So those are the key numbers. Then I will move on to slide 24, which talks about the financial position of the SEF group. Basically, this statement shows whether you have got enough money to fund your liabilities going forward, or you don't. And if you don't, then that's when AG raises the issues of going concern. But at high level, SEF group has got assets which are worth 33 billion rand. So that's the key. And then in terms of liabilities, our liabilities are 19 billion rand. Again, the liabilities, the main issue there is the rehabilitation provision that is at PetroSA. We'll talk to it later on. But in terms of the normal liabilities, we don't have a lot of liabilities to the external parties. And then we have got equity of 18.6 billion rand as a SEF group. And then moving on to slide 25. Slide 25, we are measuring whether the group has got enough assets to cover its liabilities. So we have what is called a loan covenant that we got from National Treasury when Petro is a had to go and borrow money. So they say at any given point we need to have a maximum of debt that amounts to 40% of the asset, and then 60% must be covered by equity. And when we looked at it at year end, 12% was debt, 88% was equity, so we are well within our the target that have been set by National Treasury. So if we need to fund growth and then and the sustainability plans, we are able to fund without resorting to external loans using our own internal resources. Then slide 26, the key slide, it tries to remove the distortion that comes from the accounting standard. It shows the cash. So when we look at the SAF group, last year it generated cash of 1.2 billion rand. This year generated 2.4 billion rand. So in terms of the cash, we have done well. If you remember earlier on, I spoke about a number which is the profit number, which was around 358. So when you remove the accounting adjustment and everything else, when you look at it from the cash perspective, it's 2.4 billion rand that was generated by the business. So that's how much money was generated. And then the investments that the group made was 284 million rand. Mainly this comes from Petro SA. And then after that, then we paid the debts, 133 million rand, which is the financing activities. And lastly, in that line, is the issue of foreign exchange. When the rand strengthens, we tend to have problems because we have got money that is in foreign accounts, which is called CFC. So when we revalue that money, it always shows a lower number. So because of that, we had to do a fair value adjustment of 580 million rand. And then we ended up with a cash of 17 billion rand as a SAF group. And that 17 billion, we have money that we received from the sale of the strategic stock. And then we also have money that we've set aside for the rehabilitation. So all in all, the money that we can access is 5.8 billion rand. And then that the group has got access to 11.3 billion rand that we can use to fund our business. So that is the key part. Then I will move to slide 27. Slide 27, we are explaining where do these numbers come from. So the main part, as we indicated earlier, the improvement in operating cash flow comes from the improved business performance in terms of the margins that we make from the sale of the products, and then the containment in terms of cost, normally the operation cost. So that's where it comes from. And then, with your permission, Chair, I will hand back to the CEO.
Thanks, Chair. Chair, slide 28 just provides a quick overview of all the activities, by entity, and just highlighting provide some of the highlights per entity. So Petro SA, during the year-end review, we had a successful execution of the what you call it, a partial refinery shutdown. I think that went quite well. Successful restart of FO10. This really more around well optimization to try to extend, I think, the life of the life of fields, improve petrostate cash balance against projected losses, mainly attributed to, I think, to cost containment initiatives, you know, in PetroSA, as well as some of the initiatives that we spoke about in relation to the transformation and supply development initiatives. We are, though, Chair, aware, fully aware of some of the, I think, the current challenges in relation to, I think, to feedstock, and the current reduction in, the, you know, in cash balances, some operational challenges at the Mossel Bay you know, facility, you know, which have also created some negative perception that the entity is bankrupt, and you know, and so forth. And when we talk about the PetroSA emergency plan, we are then going to provide you with the framework of what it is that we've already started doing in radically addressing some of these issues within a specified you know, timeline, so that we can be able to arrest some of these issues and deal decisively, you know, with the with the challenges that we have, whether it's at an operational level, also at a strategic level. SFF, you know, they completed the ISO 14001 transition audits, only three minor findings, which is, you know, quite good by, you know, by all standards, as well as continue to receive various inquiries from European-based companies for potential, I think, storage, which, you know, results in potential revenue for, you know, for the entity, as well as executing on the storage price benchmarking study, you know, that we have done. And similarly to SFF, Chair, and the issues relating to the sale of the strategic stock continue to be a priority, I think, on our side. And when we get to, I think, where we are in terms of the process and what's likely to happen, it just gives you a sense of how, you know, how we are trying to prioritize this particular concern from an SFF perspective. IGAS continues to do well, Chair, and the CFO, I think, has alluded to that in terms of the dividend payments, which go on to support some of the group's strategic initiatives, as well as some of those being channeled to other developmental initiatives. Remains a cash-positive entity, and going forward, there's some big initiatives that we have planned in terms of how we grow in IGAS and be able to, you know, to bring more gas, you know, into the country. But it's a great asset, Chair. African Exploration Mining and Finance Corporation, you know, continue to deliver its first call out of one of the JVs, you know, to Eskom, and it's really been a great, you know, success story in terms of looking at, you know, potential acquisitions, and that's really going to be the backbone of AE's growth. It's going to be on the back of strategic acquisitions, looking for those near producing or producing assets. They continue to have an excellent safety record, with no lost time injuries and no fatalities. And as I alluded earlier on, we did have, you know, challenges in relation to the quality of coal, and also not being able to meet, you know, some of the, you know, of the contracted, you know, volumes. From a safe SOC EPD as well as PASA perspective, you know, the Department of Energy announced that the power purchase agreements for renewable energy IPPs would be signed by the 14th of March, so that's just before the close of our financial year. And common knowledge that those have been signed, and it has also created an opportunity, I think, for us, or has enabled us to move with speed with some of our investments in the Aqua Redstone, you know, project. Continue to support the department on a number of engagements, such as the National Energy Indaba, bringing captains of industry, where we deliberated on a number of energy issues, and also continuing to support, I think, the subsidiaries. During the year under review, I think there was a lot of focus around, I think, strengthening oversight. And Chair, this really is driven around, I think, what we're dealing with today in relation to SFF as well as PetroSA. So where the centre is really beginning to take charge of its entities, and going forward, I think we'll be able to come and account to this committee what we're also doing in terms of consequence management in relation to poor business performance, because it cannot be, Chair, that we just turn a blind eye in relation to poor business performance. You know, we partnered with the BITS Business School. This is really more to facilitate the middle management and senior leadership team. It's really targeted training. It's now moving into an area of mentorship and you know, senior leadership development and capacitation, you know, as part of trying to stabilize you know, the leadership you know, in the group. And PASA continues to lead in relation to, you know, shale gas studies, continental shelf claim, you know, initiatives, and the work that the stellar work that they're doing in the province of some of the blocks. You would have seen, I think, with, you know, with some of the Total fines, and that's really, I think, some of the stellar work that PASA continues to do to really promote the opportunities that exist on our shores, and we must commend them, I think, for that. Chair, slide 31, in terms of our risks. So, I mean, on a daily basis, the group embarks on a group strategic risk workshop to identify key risks and devise mitigation plans. And each entity then has its own risk register to, you know, to mitigate against you know, emerging risks. So for the annual review, we had identified 10 key strategic risks, and slide on the table. So on the slide on the left hand side really depicts that out of the 10 top strategic risks, 40% of those were deemed to be extreme, and it's those risks at the bottom there. So financial sustainability was deemed to be extreme, and that's purely from a PetroSA perspective. It's an entity that accounts for more than 85% of all group revenue. So if we've got challenges with PetroSA, it means we've got challenges, I think, within the group. So hence, which is why we're prioritizing PetroSA, and hence, which is why any issues relating to PetroSA are then deemed as, I think, extreme from a financial sustainability. Security of energy supply, strategy definition and execution, as well as issues of funding. But issues of strategy definition and execution, it's mainly around the group's value proposition, and, you know, what is it that the SAFE group really stands for? We operate right across the value chain, but what is that one thing that we can say we as a SAFE group own completely? But I think those risks as well, Chair, also talk to an imbalanced portfolio, and also I think what the CFO alluded to in the financials, that if you look at most of our income, it's really mainly from interest income from the cash balances that we have. We need to move to a space where we are generating more revenue from our business operation. Slide on the right, Chair, is just the impact then of these risks on the key strategic objectives that we have set ourselves. So earlier on, I had taken the committee through the business performance scorecard, which had financial viability, and so this is the impact. So from a growth and sustainability, those risks impact that particular area by 40%. Innovation and business excellence, the risks impact us by 10%. We've got somewhat a handle on those. Governance by 30%. And we continue to do some work around having a group common group governance framework there, and strategic partnership and leadership in noise 20%. And those really relate to depleted cash reserves, limited project pipeline as the root causes, inadequate shared systems, leadership vacancies, and of course an archaic operating model, you know, that we have as a safe group. Chair, this is the last time I hand over to the CFO. You know, after this one, just for him just to take us through the irregular and fruitless and wasteful expenditure. It is the last time we he hands the baton back to me, with your permission.
Thank you.
Yeah,
you and the chairperson. The irregular expenditure for the group were 17 million rand for the year. When you look at the subgroup from 2013, we came down from 2.7 billion rand to 17, but we still need to do more to improve on this. And then mainly the irregularity comes from non-compliance with company policies, and they come mainly from Petro SA. There's some payments that were being done without contracts in relation to rental, and then there's also someone was seconded, and Petro SA continues to pay the person, but they are not able to recover the cost. So that's one of that. And then we then go to still on slide 33. Then there's fruitless and wasteful expenditure. The fruitless and wasteful expenditure for theft $6 million. Even this one, when you look at the trend, we are improving on our performance. Mainly this come from the two main entities. So one is Petro SA. They've got some penalties that they had to pay. It was mainly called a duty at source, which amounts to 8.7 million rand. And then there is also AE that also incurred 4 million rand in terms of less and less expenditure. The other entity, they do have them, but they are immaterial. So around this part, we will look at them in detail, understand what happened, as the CEO said, then consider the actions that need to be taken, but people are busy with the investigation to understand why, and where agreements were not signed, and Petro said they've already started with the process of ratifying that part. So we hope to keep on reducing this number to zero. So that's it for me. I think with your permission, Chair, I will hand over to the CEO.
CEO. Chair, thank you very much. Chair, I now move to what we call the priority feedback, slide 34, 35. These are the topical issues, which we. It's important that I think we provide feedback on these. There's five of them, which is the SFF stock rotation, concerns that were raised around the leadership vacancies and capacitation, issues of transformation, governance, as well as what are we doing in relation to, I think, to Petro SA. Chair, I think on SFF, it's part of an ongoing process to try and deal with the matter. So the SAFE Group has lodged an application in the Western Cape High Court, to set aside the disposal, of the strategic stock, on the grounds that these were unlawful, invalid, and unconstitutional. So and we provide their chair just a, you know, just an overview of potential permutations, you know, if this matter were to go in one particular direction. This matter is an ongoing legal process, and through the SEF board and the SFF board, much progress has been made in relation to that particular process, and it's a matter that's sub judice. And you know, that's the, you know, the high level feedback that we'll provide, I think, on that, Chair. Leadership vacancies and capacitation, I think I've alluded to, I think, to that, in terms of the partnership with the Wits Business School to upskill and develop the middle management and senior leadership managers with the right skills and tools in order to be able to lead. We've also, as also aware of the number of acting roles in terms of the senior leadership. So a number of interviews, you know, have taken place, and certain appointments in due course, you know, will be made. So the various boards are prioritizing those, because it's important that we have stable leadership to be able to drive some of the initiatives, you know, that we've spoken about, but most importantly to drive the emerging, you know, group strategy. Transformation, Chair, also alluded that it continues to be work in progress. We have made great progress in terms of our supply development programs, but it's mainly at, you know, at PetroSA, and then the next financial year it becomes a group effort where there's various initiatives from an ICAS perspective, also from an AE perspective, because those are the, you know, they're mainly the operational operational entities. We are addressing the issue of employment equity and ensuring that we bring as many female colleagues into senior leadership roles, and that will form, that's very much linked around the filling of some of the vacancies, you know, that we've identified. And as I said, you know, a number of interviews, you know, have already taken place, with some of those, you know, having taken place as late as 3 weeks ago. But this is really forms part and parcel of the employee, broader employee value proposition program, you know, that we're trying, you know, that we're running. I think governance, I alluded to the fact that SEF, you know, has begun to strengthen its oversight role in relation to how it deals with the, you know, with its subsidiaries, and ensuring that we begin to exercise you know, some of the various tools that we have, whether it's issues of the shareholders' compacts that we have, you know, with the subsidiaries, but also just the frequency of the business performance, you know, engagements, as well as other developmental, you know, initiatives, I think, around there. I think the biggest priority in terms of priority feedback is around you know, PetroSA. We've spoken about issues of turnaround, and I think for an entity like PetroSA, you know, some of these initiatives take time because you are also dealing with legacy issues. So the SEF, you know, SEF is then prioritizing and actually driving what we call a PetroSA emergency plan. It's a 7-month program that's targeting key areas in terms of addressing some of the challenges, I think, at PetroSA, but it's mainly focused on what we call the business of today. It's activities, you know, that we are currently doing today. There are issues of stakeholder management that need to be addressed, I think, at PetroSA. But what we're also saying is that PetroSA sustainability and the PetroSA emergency plan or PetroSA turnaround is no longer just a PetroSA conversation, but it's a group conversation. So there are initiatives that we've already put in place in terms of how do we begin to leverage the group infrastructure to support PetroSA, you know, on a number of their business operations. So this is issues of tankage, you know, and other assets that PetroSA needs to be able to operate. We're also going to be deploying an external refinery team, and that's really looking at issues of refinery optimization, LP modeling, so that we can begin to improve the product yield in the refinery, but also how do we build sustainable operational efficiencies in the refinery. So we're hoping to deploy the team in the next couple of weeks. There have been engagements between the two boards having to align with some of the modalities on how jointly the two boards can support each other in ensuring that we can deliver on this from a PetroSA emergency plan, I think, perspective. We're also strengthening sales and business development. One area where we're weak is around our footprint, but also our product placement strategy. So there's a plan in terms of how we strengthen sales and business development and also begin to de-risk that particular area of the business. I spoke about it earlier on, but institute consequence management. It cannot be that we can have poor business performance quarter on quarter and nothing happens. And it's important that we address those. So the 7-month plan is also going to deal with how we hold people to account, but also, people, those that are found, to have acted in a manner that has caused the organization to be where it is, must be, dealt with. Partnership strategy, it's a high risk, and it's a risky, but also capital-intensive environment, and some of the initiatives that we want to execute on can no longer be done on our own balance sheet. So this will form part of our partnership strategy, and this is right across, PetroSA's energy value chain, whether it's upstream, midstream, as well as downstream. Accelerate, I think, the co-investment strategy. I think in areas where we could look at potential de-risking, where we could. We were looking at potential partners who have got the right skills, who have got the right tools and the right assets to be able to support us on some of our initiatives. It's also how we optimize the feedstock sourcing strategy. I think the CFO spoke about it. So, because on the income statement line, if we begin to make a loss at a gross margin line, then anything else that follows after becomes superfluous. So there's a strategy around how we are going to optimize the feedstock sourcing for the refinery. And again, this is within the seven month period. The two CFOs, the CFO as well as the PetroSA CFO, are spearheading what we call financial cash preservation initiatives. Where can we also look at the sharing of resources across the group? How do we prioritize, I think, a number of initiatives? And this could also be studies. At times we find that AE could be running with a particular study or IES. So we're looking at combining those for the benefit not only the group, but also how we support PetroSA within the same period. Group shared services, I think there's an opportunity there for us to leverage on that and be able to share skills and resources. And that's purely based on scale as well as agility. And also improving the PetroSA's cash collection cycle, which is really above, I think industry norms. And we need to bring this down to industry norms where third parties may be using this, as their bank. But it's important that we improve PetroSA's cash collection cycle so that those funds can be better utilized, at the operations. But most importantly, I think to support all of these is the leadership stabilization and capacitation. So we're also quite clear about what needs to happen as part of the 7-month plan to bring about the desired leadership stabilization in certain key roles, mainly at the refinery, biggest asset, trading, supply, logistics, finance, and other key strategic roles within the organization. So that's the business of today in terms of our key focus areas. So there's, I think, a plan around that, and some of the initiatives are, you know, already underway. I also spoke about us then injecting an external refinery expertise that are really going to look at the overall business performance of the refinery. But as we do that, we're also looking at what we then call the business of tomorrow, because we believe that PetroSA can survive beyond today. So its components around value optimization, we have moved quite swiftly around how we improve our downstream presence, and when we build on that through what we call, I think, a bolt-on, as we create much more value in the new PetroSA that we see, and also how then do we build about some business integration. So, Chair, in summary, so I mean, the PetroSA emergency plan is a 7-month rapid process. It's targeted initiatives, and these are really targeted to give us the headroom that we need in order to be able to begin to focus on what we call the business of tomorrow, which forms part of the new business strategy. But we need to fix what is broken today, or else we will not have a PetroSA tomorrow. But this is in recognition of the challenges that we have at PetroSA, which are not, which we are not taking very lightly. Chair, going forward, I think we've provided an overview of 2017, 2018, financial year. So I mean, the question, so what? So sometime last year, Chair, we came and we spoke about a group strategy review process that we embarked upon, and we spoke about the need for a change in the group's operating model, and we had consulted with an outside party who provided us with some input. So what they provided us, Chair, is what we call the recommendations in six strategic areas in terms of how the SEF group could be able to turn around, and I think this was valuable input, but I think further work I think needed to be done in terms of how do you then move from just the recommendation and how do you begin to operationalize that. And the input there, Chair, has really formed part of really of now the new group strategic thinking. Moving to I think to slide 39, just provide some context after that, Chair, is that so when that work was done, it's also been a realization that there has been certain shifts though in the external environment, in terms of I think the disruption that continue to be caused by new technologies and the need for the group to to adopt energy 4.0 compliant, but also the fast pace of the gas development in the THADEC region, Mozambique to be specific, and the reducing costs of renewable energy. I think recently is then the Total fund, because it becomes a game changer, I think for all of us, and what we could potentially do, I think from a SEF group perspective. When you juxtapose that with some of the internal change that I spoke about in terms of the financial sustainability of the organization, mainly in relation to PetroSA and the need to find affordable feedstock in the business of today, and the inadequate market share, I think those paint to a need for some changes. Chair, so which is why, so coupled with the work that was done by BCG in terms of providing us with key recommendations, we have now developed what we call Vision 2014 Plus. That's also driven by where the IRP wants to take us. It was only made public, I think, after the piece of work had been done, so we had to take that into consideration. But I think our Vision 2040 Plus also takes into consideration that we are part of the African continent, and therefore the AU's Vision 2063 must become a key component of our Vision 2040 Plus and what we see as potential energy policy shifts. So Vision 2040 Plus is really beyond just us as a third group providing security of energy supply, but beginning to play a key role in reigniting the SA economy. So it's thinking about beyond the security of energy supply. And Vision 2040 Plus is a commercially driven strategy, Chair. It's our license to operate, because if we are not commercially viable, then we are not able to deliver on some of the developmental initiatives, you know, that are required, I think, by government. It conceptualizes the economic and social possibilities that are created when affordable and accessible energy becomes a bigger reality. It's about collaboration. It's about the technological advancements. It's really also built on the fourth industrial revolution, on how the SEF group right across the value chain begins to adopt these new technologies. And as I said, it's about what we do today to get us to the business of tomorrow, and also just becoming, I think, relevant. But at the core of Vision 2040 chain is growth. So where do we want to be? And that's slide, slide 41 in relation to Vision 2040. It's being this integrated energy company that delivers value in an integrated manner. So currently, we still operate, I think, in silos, but I think the work done by BCG and the subsequent work is really the creation of a revised group operating model that ensures that we operate in a seamless and integrated manner. It's the creation of an exponential organization, or what we call a high performance organization. And we've already moved with that, Chair, in April, May, with the deployment of a group-wide business performance management system that will allow us to further improve operational excellence, but also be able to hold everyone to account, and that's part of how we're trying to strengthen oversight. Being a significant contributor to the GDP and a dependable and capable partner, active and significant player, not only in South Africa, but in the region. So this forms part of the regional growth strategy, and also the Africa growth strategy, I think, as part of this, and a pioneer and a thought leader, and some of the initiatives that we're doing around, I think, the clean fuels, as well as looking at the battery storage. So there's initiatives that are being driven by AE in terms of looking at various minerals and sources that they can mine that talk to the whole renewable and storage battery. And also just being an innovation leader. So some of the key drivers here at the bottom there is, one is the delivery of the PetroSA emergency plan, which is going to be delivered, I think, this year. It's how we diversify our revenue streams, the commercialization of new technologies. We've moved with that in terms of the battery storage opportunities, that we're looking at. It's partnerships across, I think, the continent. So just clarity on when we do and partner with some of our colleagues in the continent, that is driven by our Africa growth strategy, appropriate funding model, and how we prioritize funding across the group, because there's growth opportunities at AE, there's growth opportunities at IGAS, there's growth opportunities at PetroSA, but how do you begin to prioritize all those opportunities with the limited budget? Greenfields refining development, really taking a lead from our shareholder, we moved to that particular process through the signing of an NDA, and we are now busy looking at the technical aspects of this particular initiative. Clearly defined value proposition and efficient operating model, and our indicators are going to be market share, average returns of 15%, and doubling the current assets value and presence in the region as well as the continent, but also that diversification of the portfolio. right now it's very much skewed towards PetroSA, and this is a risk for the group. It's important that we diversify, you know, our portfolio. Chair, the Vision 2040 plus is going to be delivered in, you know, really in four stages. We acknowledge that we cannot move from where we are if we do not address, I think, some of the initiatives. So, you know, phase one is really about addressing some of the PetroSA issues, and hence the PetroSA emergency plan, the regional and continental goal strategy, and work that we've already done around the Energy 4.0 you know, adoption, and some of the strategic partnerships that we already have with major entities looking at issues of clean coal technology, you know, and so forth. Phase two is really about the transitioning process to the desired, I think, end state, and us then moving to the new operating model. Phase three, the acceleration of some of these initiatives with the group growth agenda, I think, at the center. And phase four is really just the continuous, I think, refocus. But Vision 2040 Plus is an agile and a continuous strategy, you know, Chair, with growth, you know, at the heart of the, you know, the strategy. So, Chairman, although we are faced with quite a number of challenges, you know, we believe that, or we are confident that we'll be able to arrest some of these, and that Vision 2040 will really has really provided us with the right foundation in terms of the growth that we want to achieve and the desired I think end states. The next financial year, you'll see, I think, a number of initiatives that we have put in place, you know, to drive I think some of these initiatives. But I think going forward, it's really about finding the long-term solution, I think, for the refinery. But that's well articulated in terms of where we see the refinery as part of Vision 2040 Plus. It's about improving the market position and relevance through, I think, through scale, not only in the region, but also in the continent. And that's going to be at the back of the strategic collaboration. It's about commercial growth through transformation. But that requires us to be agile as well. And it's about creating new possibilities as we embrace the technological advancements. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much for your attention.
We'll now take questions. I'm missing Honorable Estay there. He always talks about you when you're not here. Okay, can I see hands? The apology of the minister is very understandable. After the presentation, I feel very sad that he's not here. No, the apology is understandable. But let me take questions. So I don't want to preempt anything now. So you'll give me a chance later on. Honorable Manham.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I have a lot of
questions. Honorable Mahambesala will follow.
Chair, I have a lot of questions. I don't know how you want to deal with it, but I mean, and excuse me, being...
Honorable Manham, it's a long presentation, maybe not in terms of the number of pages, but it deals with a whole lot of things. Put forward all your questions.
Okay. Thank you, Chair. And Chair, if you will excuse me, I'm fairly new to the committee, so there may be things that I ask where the question might seem a bit dumb, and I beg your forgiveness in that regard. I'm trying to learn as I go along.
We haven't seen Seth in a very long time, I realize today. So we are in the same position as you.
Okay, yep. Thanks, Chair. Chair, my first question is, the CEO spoke about the shareholder compact, and there seems to be a discrepancy between the annual report, which says that the shareholder compact was agreed to between the CEF and the minister, and the AG's finding that says that it was not concluded with the minister. So I'd like some clarity around that. Chair, then, and again, you'll have to forgive me because I'm not an accountant. But if I have a look at the slides on the financial performance of the group, and particularly slide 21. First of all, I note what the CEO said, that Petro SA is a huge portion of the CEF's portfolio. I think it's somewhere in the region of about 70% of your portfolio. And that raises a lot of concerns for me, given that the CEF has for the Petro SA has for the past 2 years run at a loss, which means that it has an enormous impact on the group. But if I look at Petro SA and then the group, and I'm looking at the second last line where it talks about taxation, and those two are largely redeemed by a positive taxation figure. Now, if I go over the page to slide 23, it says the profit was due to a decrease in deferred tax liability. And I don't know what that means. I'd like that unpacked for me. The second thing I'd like unpacked for me is also on slide 23, again, the second last line, where you say, excluding the national interest. What is the national interest? What is that? I have no idea what you're referring to here. I'd like to talk for a second about the Strategic Fuel Fund. So obviously we had this controversial sale, and it's now before the court and being dealt with there. But there are a couple of issues that I'd like some answers on. The first is, what sort of time frame does that court process have in front of it? When is it expected to be concluded? The second is, there were some reports that were generated, investigative reports that were generated. Now, I know that there have been prior requests for those reports. Would it be possible to table those reports before this committee so that we can see what's going on as well? The third thing is that the numbers don't seem to add up. Let me tell you what I'm referring to here. On slide 26, for example, you talk about the proceeds from the sale as being 3.38 billion rand. On slide 35, you say the estimated total amount repayable is 3.7 billion rand. If I look at the amount of money that was paid into your accounts, according to the reports, it was $218 million for the three different companies that paid. And I can give you the exact figure. Let me do that. So it was $112 million by Talaveras. It was $78,606,000 by Venus Trading, and $90,224,000 by Besquin. Now, at the prevailing exchange rate at the time, that would be $4.3 billion. My question is, where is this money gone? Why don't the numbers add up? There seems to be some huge discrepancy as to exactly how much was paid, how much is reflecting in your accounts. What format is it in your accounts? Is it reflecting in rands? Is it reflecting in dollars? How are you holding that money? Because you said it's being held in a sort of a ring-fenced account, I think was the term you used. So if it's being held there, is it being held in dollars? Is it being held in rands? Because if it's being held in rands, the value of the rand to the dollar is fluctuating on a daily basis. I'd like some clarity on that. Turning to Petro SA, one of the things that Petro SA was working on was enhanced condensate processing, and that was supposed to be completed by July 2017. Can we get some clarity as to what the status of that research is? The feasibility study, has that been completed? Has it not been completed? Also on Petro SA, they have an obligation to rehabilitate their offshore and onshore operations. That rehabilitation is valued at 8.1 billion rand, and Petro SA has set aside 2.4 billion rand to do that. So there's a shortfall in the funding of rehabilitation of 5.7 billion. Given that they're running at a loss and have for the last several years, how are they going to fund that rehabilitation? I'd like some clarity as to the impact of the total gas fund off the coastline of South Africa on Petro SA. Is it going to have any impact at all? Is it not going to have an impact? What will it do to Petro SA's revenues, business model, etc.? And then lastly, for now, no, two last questions. The first relates to the board structure at Petro SA. I understand that there are a number of challenges at board level at Petro SA with members disagreeing with each other publicly, writing letters to the minister, disagreeing with what other board members are saying, etc., etc. One of the challenges that the CEF faces in at both at a group level and at a Petro SA level is your stability, and you've highlighted this on a number of occasions in previous reports to this committee. So, what are you doing to stabilize the board at Petro SA? Secondly, and related to that, is the massive management challenge faced by Petro SA and the CEF, where in both instances you have been without a CEO, a permanent appointment of a CEO for several years. So what's being done about that? I realize that you've had three ministers in 3 years, but, you know, somebody needs to take accountability. And if it's the minister, then the minister must come and appear before us and answer the question. Why is there not a permanent CEO at the CEF? Why is there not a permanent CEO at Petro SA? Because all of these things here, and it's clear in the AG's findings. If we have a look on slide 9, level of assurance, you'll see that amongst the challenges are senior management, accounting authority, executive authority, that there's a problem with providing assurance. And you can't provide assurance if you don't have stability and leadership coming through. Equally, leadership culture, effective leadership culture is concerning according to the AG. So these are things that we really need to address if we're going to turn it around. Chairperson, my last comment. If I look at this room here, I think there are way too many people. I heard someone say that he was the health and safety compliance officer or some such for the SSF or Petro SA, I'm not sure. And I have to wonder, why is that person appearing before a parliamentary committee? We don't have any questions around health and safety. There have been no health and safety challenges over the course of the past year that affect any of the entities here that I'm aware of. I mean, I could be wrong. But I have to question the expense that is being wasted on bringing 22 odd people, to appear before a parliamentary committee. I would understand the CEO, the CFO, the chairman of the board. But when you bring 22 odd people and only one or two of them answer questions, then I have to query, is this not extravagance of the worst kind? Thank you, Chair.
Thanks, Madam. Honorable Mohamed Salah, followed by Honorable Matar.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, let me first welcome the presentation by Seth. Their CSI programs are so impressive. Probably that's why they started with them in their presentation, which is not so impressive. Chair, let me start with the last one. Vision 2040 plus. I'm confused, Chair. Perhaps the group must clarify us as to where do they get a vision 2040 plus when the NDP of the country, which guides us on everything, is a vision 2030. Full stop. Now, what informs your vision 2040 plus? Because I find it very contradictory with the standards that the country has set for us to go about in terms of the economic infrastructure, which in it speaks to energy as a whole. So I need some sort of clarity on that. And Chair, there are projections which says that Petro SA will run out of gas by 2020. I don't find it in this vision 2040 plus something that will cover and address that particular projection which is out there for all to see. I also need to be clarified on that issue. I'm puzzled to hear on the report that we still talk about the impairment. Since I arrived in Parliament, there's been an impairment of Petro SA. I arrived here in 2014, and we are in an election year. I don't know whether I'm coming back or not. But because information is power, I need to understand, what do you intend to do with the impairment which is in fact rising at Petro SA? Because in your reports, you remove impairment and want to project some good kind of figures for Petro SA. So you can't remove that thing. That thing is there permanently. And in terms of the AG, that impairment was classified as fruitless expenditure, if I still remember, long ago. And we still talk of impairment to date. What's your intended solution on that thing of the impairment? If I had the CEO correctly. He said that the summary of their performance is as agreed in the shareholder compact with the shareholder on delivering on SAF and so on. A few weeks ago, AG was here, Chairperson. He made a point that a shareholder's compact of SAF in Vatichula was not concluded in consultation with the executive authority. That's what the AG reports to the portfolio a few weeks ago. And you are here today to tell us something else. What's going on? What's happening there itself? Which shareholder compact are you referring to? Because if yours was not in consultation with the executive authority, it is inconsistent with the laws of this country, in my view. So I need a clarity on that. How will Petro SA raise the required funding on the rehabilitation liability? Because as things stand, Petro SA is running at a loss. So I think SAF can respond to this because Petro SA is one of your subsidiaries. In the report, or part of the turnaround strategy, it does not speak to the restructuring, which was reported here 2017. What do you intend to do? Are you still restructuring, or you decided to abandon the restructuring because it was reported here 2017 that there will be that kind of restructuring and that there's a decline on the gas reserves. So I think this one you should also couple it with the projections which are there, which I alluded to earlier on, that the gas reserves of Petro SA are declining. Are we going to see gas in the energy mix of the country, or we must just say goodbye to gas if they are so declining? And out there, there's a projection that the country has no gas at all. So those are few clarity-seeking questions, Chairperson, which I pose to the group, and in fact, one last issue: SFF, the rotation of the stock. How far is that investigation? Because that investigation has been there since I don't know how long. So we want to know how far is that investigation, if there are outcomes, when are those outcomes going to be implemented, shall we wait for the 6th Parliament for you to do that, because the Parliament is rising on the 21st of March, so we won't see you now, we'll see you after elections if we see you. So those are a few questions,
Chair. Thank you, Chair, and DG, and my governmental officials and my colleagues. It's unfortunate, Chair, to speak after Honorable Mahanda Shala. It's like she was copying my questions. No, I'm not saying she was. I'm saying it's like she was copying my questions because this issue is long overdue, Chair. This question, that's why you said you are looking for Honorable Yesterhazen, because he was asking this question for the past 5 years, since 2014. He was asking one and the same question, and up to today he didn't get the clarity from questions that he was asking. Some of the questions were asked by Honorable Mela, yeah, the newcomer to the committee. And it's very concerning because we don't get answers. I'm also concerned, Chair, with regard to the issue of these Hollywood actors, because from time to time we are raising these things like the department is not taking us seriously as a committee. I'm raising this, Chair, because you do remember at some point the DG of the department was deployed somewhere to assist one of the entities here. And the department by then, Chair, was in a mess. It was in a disarray because they couldn't take a decision and commit the department because the head of the department was not there. So this whole week enters. They won't take decisions, Chair, because they are not sure of their next meal. And if a person is on acting, Chair, it's not serious, because tomorrow can be relieved from his duties. It's not sure. He's looking for some other job somewhere. Most of his time or the time, he spent looking for jobs somewhere because he might be fired or excused from the job he's doing temporarily. So that's such a person. It's not serious. So, DG, these actors, the Hollywood ones, seriously, could you kindly deal with some of these people? Because there are a lot of challenges in these entities, very serious challenges. And Mr. Honorable Madam here was asking the same questions that my colleague who was not here, he would ask you these questions. And how do you answer some of these questions, not failing to answer them? If I go and do my constituency work down there in a village called Sikunkune, and one old lady asked me the same questions that were asked in 2014, how do I convince her that your government is doing very well? It's very hard. She can't even read in English. So some of you were being explained to you a long time ago, didn't you, that some of your things must be written in all official languages of South Africa, so that even a person who didn't go to school can be able to understand what is the department up to. Where are we now with regard to their programs and all these other things? It's a very important thing, Chair. The other one, Chair, which I want to check with the NTT here is with regard to their meeting with the AG or the DG of the department to assist them on dealing with some of these challenges that they are faced with. Because if they don't meet with the department, then say the department will say, no, things are very well. They are going very well in the entities because you don't have challenges. Except to run to the department to say, Emirate, can we increase our budget here? We want to run some of this project, which are not there. Even if the department can approve and give you money to run your project, you won't be able to run those projects. Because one of the things that I want to ask relates to the program. You made mention of a 7 month program. Yeah. With the challenges that you are faced with, will you be able to deal with this challenges in 7 months program? Because in my view, that program needs some 3-year project, a serious project to deal with some of your challenges. But a 7-month program, check, I don't know. Even in football, they can't have a 7-month program. Barocca, somebody say Barocca versus Nepal. Yeah, that's where it comes from, Barocca and Nepal. The other one, if you made mention of you are the first coal out of Chilwawusiu coal delivery to Eskom was achieved on March 2018 as part of growth agenda. But here you've got some problems. How often do you meet with what is your relationship with Eskom? What was your relationship with people who were supplying Eskom with coal? Because Eskom cannot extract coal from mining. Somebody must do that on behalf of Eskom. The group chair underwent a strategy and operational model review. So could you kindly explain to us, sir, explain to the committee in fact, that what is this strategy entails? The strategy that you underwent as a group. Can you also share with us not only the chief financial officer, but all of you, because you are part of them. That's why Mr. Melam was asking why there are lots of delegations here, because this question, question and answers must not be answered by the chair of the board or the CEO or the chief financial officer. You accompany them. You are part of them. Isn't it? You accompany them. You are working together. You are doing the same thing almost every day. I hope some of the questions must be answered by some of you, the delegations accompanying your entity here. Because you don't have to come here as a spectator and look at the chief financial officer, the acting one, in fact, and the chief executive officer to answer these questions, or the chair of the board. So I think all of you, you must answer these questions, unless otherwise you came here as spectators to watch Barocca versus Nepal. That's what you're saying. So I want to know, Chair, there is this thing that is mentioned here. The post-commencement funding, which valued at 1 billion. Can you share with us this thing? I'm told it's a sort of an award. You were awarded 1 billion for post-commencement funding. I don't know what is this thing. Can you unpack these things? Because Matala can't understand these things. Because you're not doing these things from time to time. There are a lot of entities, department, minister, so we can't. Can you educate me? What is this thing? Anima? I might stop here because I must save some of my questions to Honorable Mr. Mabunda. Thank you very much.
Am I given an opportunity?
Yes. Go ahead, Honorable Mabunda.
Okay.
Thanks, Honorable Mabunda.
No, thanks, Chair. I think the presentation was too long, such that somehow, somewhere, I got lost. But let me talk to those which I think I got grab of. But some of the things just came in. Meanwhile, of course, we want to know why they are here. Okay, on the solar water heater project, some of us asked this question last time. It belongs to irregular expenditure, and as a result of the storage, that is what you say. This has been identified in the AGIS report. That is what the AGIS report says. Now, what does this solar water heater get to serve? How did it came to appear to the SEF as an entity? One other question is, I think the CFO who said in his presentation, he says you are also even giving blankets and building houses and also assist needy schools with shoes. And what criteria do you use to identify those needy beneficiaries? On slide 53, on group irregular expenditure, it was mentioned by the presenter that the loss incurred irregular expenditure, now it's at 17 million rand, and he called it improvement. Is this improvement? One loss is one loss too many, I should think. Because loss is a loss. Even if it was half a million, I think that is a loss. I don't think we can pride ourselves of the loss that we incur. On slide number 31 on the presentation, the 40% rate risk, the risk area. You mentioned the financial sustainability, security of supply, and so on and so on. What about them? If you say financial sustainability, what about it? Can you elaborate a little bit as to what are you trying to put forward so that we are able to understand, like Honorable Matara said, you were reading it in a very laborative way, but to summarize, we are unable to comprehend, some of us, because we are not dealing with those things. Immediately after you put a full stop talking, everything is vanished. We cannot refer to it next time, because there is that tendency of bringing same issues every time, summarized, and we can't refer to it to say, but you talked about this last time. It's here in writing. So we need it to be in a written form so that we are able to hold the department accountable for the recurring of the same things which we had in the past. I think, Chair, those are some of the questions which I notified I would want to be clarified about. Thanks, Chair.
Thanks, thanks, Honourable Mabunda.
The last one, Chair. I'm sorry.
I'm
sorry, Chair. Sorry. My apologies. It is with regard to gas. The discovery of gas in SADC, which Honorable Mahambe Sala indicated that we often hear about the shortage of gas in our country, but now there is a discovery of gas in SADC, which we are proud of to say it is going to assist us. Now, because SADC is, it's a region, it's not just a country. Which part of SADC is it the gas discovered? So that we're able to know exactly how then are we going to benefit on that. Thanks, Chair. I'm sorry.
Okay. Thanks, members, for the questions. Can I add a few questions? I wish the minister was here because I now want to speak to him. Yeah, because we much in time. I'll make a suggestion at the end of that you should take to the minister about what you should do with the group. Because I've looked at the report. We mark in time. Let me ask my specific questions. I'll come back to my suggestion later. And you must be happy you survived us in the last 5 years. Yeah, you survived us. I think partly because of the all the instability that had occurred during that period. First, the good stuff. So the 13 CEO says this is a good story. This is a good story to tell. Now, okay, CFO, just explain that, because that was your starting point. Explain that good story against the slide 20. What do you call key drivers of business performance? 2017, 2018, look at each one of them. 10, 93, now down to 71, 1.4 million, 1.0. So look at each one of them. What do you call the key drivers of business performance? So where is the improvement? So where is the good story? So that's the one. Look at the other page. Slide 39. What do you call two? What do you call the internal context? I don't have time to read through that. Self-group financial sustainability has been in decline. The biggest entity, PetroSA, is running out of cheap indigenous feedstock and is in a financial precarious situation. PetroSA continues to lose market share. You haven't invested in renewable energy, ineffective project execution, all of that. The rest. So, when you say that, and you look at those key drivers, and then you say the story of Self Group today as we speak is a good story to tell, what informs that? And perhaps it's because of the little
net profit, which I'm coming to CFO in a while. So Honorable Mahambesal has asked the question about the restructuring of the self group. Where is it? Promised us many moons ago, where is it? The having off of PASA and AE, what's happening with that? I know what positions we hold with regard to the two, but what's happening? Nobody's saying anything about where that process is. Okay, financial performance. CFO, this thing boggles my mind. So the 17 billion revenue, and then, so you say this is good performance. Just explain to me. Net profit, 354 million, as against net loss of 621 million in the previous financial year. So looked at face value, that looks like progress. But where is the money coming from? Improved operational performance shows that. It is clear not. When we look at the figures, where is the improvement coming from? And then we show us, no, it is in fact a Petro SA car. And then the improvement of GTL refinery, I don't see that. Can you show us the figures where that comes from? So we don't have time, because I would have asked for the breakdown. So show us if there's the loss. What was the breakdown of the loss in the financial year and the reasons and the improvement in this financial year? And but we don't have time for that. But the main point I'm trying to make is, it is not as a result of improved business performance. If it is, can you show that to me? And CFO, okay, let's leave this. You said something that confused me about economic performance and technical recession. I was wondering what that has got to do with the self group. I thought it's the other way around, actually, that the technical recession and low performance has got to do with your performance, not the other way around. Not just yours, but a whole range of other entities and other private companies. So I don't understand what you're saying. The next question, buttress the point about performance and the key drivers of business performance. Look at your scorecard. You read with regard to the most important issues. Look at that. Growth projects. So when it matters for the business, you're not performing. So that's why you're starting with the CSI projects. You're too big to be telling us about some clinic, small clinic. You're too big a company to be telling us about blankets. So where it matters most, the company is failing. That the increase is attributable to improved gross profit margin for Petro SA Ghana and the GTL refinery. I still want to understand that GTL refinery though. Acquisition of production assets, can you just explain which production assets are those? I didn't hear that. I think I missed that. So, deployment of staff to Sasol. Can you explain that? I suppose under IGES. We know there's this Sasol IGES work in relation to the pipeline. So can you just explain it? I didn't understand why and where is the staff being of IGES being deployed. The forensic report, I must have gotten lost here. You're saying that the recommendations of the forensic report are being implemented. Can't remember now, it's been a long time. I don't remember this forensic report. Can you explain which one are you talking about? Have we seen it? I don't know which forensic report are you talking about. The 7 month period, so which period is this? January to July or? Total. This is an important development I both Minister of Mineral Resources and President alluded to. What I don't understand is, how come it's Total that's making this finding and Petrus A can't? Well, what happened? And just an explanation, because you hear. Was it just a coincidence what's happening? Is it because they spend more time than you did? What's happening? It's welcome news that there's a fund here on our shores, but where was the national welcome back? I think that is my last question to you before I come back with my suggestion later on. I don't think that we understand the urgency of the situation. And we have given you time on SFF, on the restructuring, on the turnaround plan for PetroSA, on the restructuring of SEF. Last year, we've been talking about those things. We gave you time, kept on postponing, waited for you to finish, to come back to us. You are here now. It's March 2019. You come to us. We much in time. I don't think we understand the urgency of the situation we are in. Okay, so let's deal with the questions before hopefully the minister will take to heart this suggestion. We need to do something urgent. We can't go on like this. In every business, all of them, starting with the group, we must essentially mark in time. Okay. Those there, just you can, I think, start with the questions and my small questions. Leave my comments, I'll come back to them at the end when we close. Because the problem with you is you are not ESCOM, so there will be no load shedding that affects the whole of the population immediately and can be on our faces. So that's why you're marking time. Okay. Did you start, Deputy Director General, you can start, you say you call yourself member of the board today. And then the the standing chair and the acting CEO. Yeah, well, I wanted to ask each one of them, who is the chair of SERF? You will see. Who is the CEO of SERF? And go through all the companies. And you see they come here, they talk very nice, no chair has an emergency. They know the chair doesn't have an emergency. So we can't deal with the crisis we have. Because you can come here, Parliament is nice, and give us nice stories. So, and this is not your a private company, this is not your company. This is a state-owned company. So when you come here, you can't come and show us the nice side of things when you know the depth of the crisis we face. It's not your company, it's a public company. Come tell us the challenges we face so that we can help you fix them. We're not interested in some good story when the good story doesn't exist. We have been working with you for the last 5 years. We know. So you can't come repeat things as if we don't know what has been going on. Go ahead. I hope you can still take our questions. Honorable Mohammed Salah is going soon. Just make sure that you respond to all her questions just before she we excuse her. Biji, are you starting?
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I may start, though I may go into some of the issues that relate directly to the SERF group. But I think overall, Chair, you have highlighted what could be the overall response to some of the delays in the decisions, particularly with regard to the CEOs. And fundamental to that is the finalization of the group strategy, which we have pointed quite correctly, that it has not been concluded to date, which to a certain extent has affected the process of filling some of the vacancies, with the hope that the minister and the group would finalize that. So that has had a negative impact, Chair, in finalizing. I think what should have been prioritized, as we have indicated, was the finalization of the group strategy, because it impacts on all subsidiaries in terms of how they're structured. Honorable Makala has indicated that one was exposed into that process when was acting as SFF, because I was one among executives that were also interviewed by the group that was responsible for that process. I think the conclusion of that process will bring some certainty in terms of where the group is going and deal with the fundamental issues that the group needs to deal with. I think part of the package that one takes with from this engagement today is to prioritize the conclusion of that process. I think you're quite right, Chair, that the time that it has taken to conclude that process is pretty much long in terms of the challenges that the group is faced with, which also impacts on the mandate that the department has in dealing with some of the issues we have at our disposal. So that's a point and a comment I can make, Chair, but the other technical issues raised, I would leave to the colleagues.
Who's next? The board member, Deputy Director General.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, we are here to account, and account, I think, will try and do. Firstly, Chair, I think as we've been saying in the presentation of the department's annual report for the same period, I think leadership stability is very important. As has been indicated, you know, the DG had to be seconded one of the entities to stabilize leadership during the same period. So we, I think as a group, operated in a context of changing executive authority. I think that I need to put plainly. And that impacted on consequence management. That impacted on the conclusion of some of the processes that had been started. So I thought I should place that on record. I think briefly on the SFF matter, the chair of SFF is here, but I think as the SEF board, we are confident that those investigations have been managed very well. Consequences, there will be. The matters are before the courts. The law enforcement authorities are seized with those matters that we believe are at a stage where they need to be dealt with by them. And I think that it is important that we give those processes together with the court process some time to ensure that we do not contaminate some of the glaring evidence that is emerging of wrongdoing. Just to also say that the strategic errors were made, if now I can one refer to some of the decisions that were taken around drilling for gas. I think there were some strategic errors made there. And what I can say is that there are processes in place now to ensure that no one division of PetroSA can determine the trajectory of the whole group of companies, the whole subgroup of companies. I think that decision to drill for FO was taken in haste, and that has cost the company hugely, and that's the impairment that was one of the biggest. But I think the CEO of PASA is here, will also attest to the fact that the drilling exercises by their very nature are very risky. And some of the companies actually impair quite a lot. It's just that their balance sheets can actually absorb all of that. The chair raised the issue of AE and PASA hiving off. We had, as a board, proceeded with both matters as directed. However, we are now aware that there is a planned reorganization of the state, macro reorganization of the state. And I believe that at this late stage, that could be impacted, that could have an impact on the hiving of AE and PASA. The issue of the shareholder compact, it is true that the shareholder compact was not approved by the executive authority, but again, I think it is fair to say that there were four executive authorities that were involved in that process. So they were in the period of 2017, from the drafting to the actual end of the financial year 2017-18, there were four ministers. And I think I do not want to say that was the issue, but it also contributed. because you know, the issue of the briefing of the executive authority that comes, and then, you know, there is a change. But also then, importantly, that same time, the accounting officer had been seconded out of the organization. And as was indicated by Honorable Matlala, it becomes very difficult to conclude matters when there is that leadership instability at the center. So, Chair, I thought I should just deal with those matters, but really plead that we believe that we are very close to the end on the SFF matter, and the last thing we would need is someone getting off on technicality in terms of accounting. Thank you.
Who is next now? CEO, okay. We don't want to be unfair with you. I mean, all of you. Another issue we raise about the risky nature of exploration. Risky and costly nature of exploration. The thing is, when we have a discussion, you don't show us that no, in fact, we did our best. But because of the nature of the operations, that's why there were problems. And you can show us examples. Other companies have taken longer than us. So that you're not just talking to us, but you're talking to the nation so that we can see that you did your best. But you're not. We're not undermining that point that you mentioned. The problem is you're not convincing that it was not because of your own failures, it was because of the nature of exploration itself. CEO.
Thanks, Chair. There's quite a number of questions, Chair. Especially on the finance. Those we're going to let, I think, the CFO, I think, deal with those, Chair. Let me tackle, Chair, the ones relating to, again, I think, the issue, I think, of strategy, I think, was a request just to unpack, you know, what is it that we did?
Yeah, how will you do that?
No, as part of the group strategy review process. So it was quite a detailed process, and it was always split into two phases. So phase one of the group strategy review was the whole safe group, analysis. So let's get to understand the financial analysis, let's get to understand the business operations, let's get to understand, I think, the risk. And then linked to that was, where do we play? So where should the safe group play? Understanding our internal capabilities, those that we have today, and the type of core capabilities that we are going to need, I think, in the future. So it was, how do we play, so where do we play, and how do we play, which then spoke about how do we configure ourselves for the opportunities, you know, that we want to pursue. We also looked at then the role of the center, so safe, you know, how do we begin to strengthen safe in order to be able to do what it needs to do from an oversight perspective. But also, when we looked at our project pipeline, it was also quite weak, and therefore, that process then also identified the need to begin to resource business development capabilities. We also looked at the benchmarking exercises. So we looked at the region, what are some of the national oil companies, gas companies doing. We looked at the continent itself. Most importantly, I think what's happening around Nigeria. We looked at the number of storage entities that we wanted to benchmark around SFF. So for each entity in the SAFE group, we benchmarked it against a number of entities. So PetroSA, SFF, AE, and so forth. Also looked at the developments in the in the renewable energy space. This process was then designed, was geared to give us, you know, an operating, a high-level group operating model, which was then going to then move us into phase two. So it was really around, so phase one was giving the proposals. So now we know your capabilities, we know where you should play, how you should be configured. Now phase two was around how do you operationalize that. And actually, so there was then going to be, I think, the detailed analysis, look at how we configure ourselves, which was the detailed work. So that piece of work, you know, has not yet happened, because I think that's quite a detail. So when you configure yourself, if you look at the group as it is today, some of the entities are on different job grading systems. So you have to harmonize that, because you cannot configure when you're on different job grading systems. But there's quite a number of things. So that's phase two of the, you know, of the process that we are going to embark on as part of the restructuring process. But phase one, in terms of recommendation, was done, which is that then also fed into, I think, the strategy review process. So linked to that, around, you know, why Vision 2040 plus versus Vision 2030, is really an issue of energy planning. So I mean, NDP goes up to 2030, but NDP is part of our milestone as part of Vision 20, as part of Vision 20. 2040 plus. So all the initiatives around up to 2030 are part of our Vision 2030 milestones. But we also took into consideration some of the latest developments in relation to the decommissioning of the Eskom fleet. How does that impact us? I think when we looked at the initial strategy, I think that those kind of initiatives were not in place. Let me also then tackle the... So we are going to reconfigure ourselves. I think that's a given. If this company secretly can maybe just tackle, I think, the issues of the shareholders, I think, compact, and then the CFO, you know, will tackle the financial questions in relation to the decommissioning liability shortfall and so on. But maybe just quickly on that, a solar water heater. So I mean, we've made good progress, I think, on that one. So in terms of ensuring that the issues related to, I think, storage, you know, that were raised, we've gone out of tender. So by the end of this month, we would have been able to, you know, to appoint a service provider that's going to assist us with the software program that's going to allow us to be able to have a database of where we have actually installed some of these solar water heaters. But the technical team is already on the ground assessing the various structures where these solar waters are going to be, you know, installed. So looking at the quality, the pressure, the water pressure, the quality of the structures in terms of the roof, as you know, can these structures be able to hold these solar water heaters. So a lot of work has happened, but come the end of this month, we would have moved another milestone in terms of the appointment of some of the service providers that, you know, that are going to assist us, I think, with that. Thanks, Chair.
You want the group cells to start with? Because I thought Mr. Mumpati wanted to say something. Where is the group figure?
Chair, with your permission, can I respond to what this?
Yes, please do.
Thank you, Chair. So, Chairperson, honorable members, to repeat what the DDG has actually already alluded to, The finalization of the compact was impacted on the obviously on the number of executive authorities that we had. We tried to engage over a period of time. There has been constant communication with the department in trying to finalize it. I think it was also perhaps impacted on the finalization of the group strategy during the 2017-2018 period, Chair. So, Chair, but the fact of the matter is we also obviously were impacted by the leadership instability within the group as well in trying to finalize the contract. Thank you, Chair.
CFO.
I will try and respond to the financial questions. So the first part, there was a question around what is emotional interest. So in accounting, when you have got what is called in a petroleum case decommissioning liability, what you do, you then say, how much will this cost me to restore this site to its original condition at the end? And then you then do what is called the present value. So you assume today, but then on a yearly basis, you must then calculate. So you must calculate interest. So basically the difference between what it will cost in future and now is that marginal interest. So every year you must then bring in the interest going forward.
Are we talking notional interest or national interest?
No, notional, not national.
On the report it says national interest. And when you presented, you said national interest.
No, maybe we
I'm very confused. What is national interest? I understand what notional interest is. I want to know what national interest is.
No, it's notional interest. It's not national interest. Notional.
It is
notional.
Here you want to ask the question of the interested money.
Even notional.
I think that covered. Then there was a question on deferred tax. Let me just go to that slide. Actually, when you look at our we can go to 21, the one that has got federal say, or 22. In a normal situation, you will have a tax expense where you are minusing, but in our case, it's not a tax expense. So, like it's an income. So it's a deferred tax asset that was raised. And this deferred tax asset comes from there is the issue of the reversal of there is an impairment that was done. So when you do those accounting adjustments, then it brings in this deferred tax asset that Petro-SA has. So it comes from Petro-SA, and it relates mainly to Petro-SA Ghana. So that's what that deferred tax relates to. And unfortunately in accounting, so in this number you've got tax that you've paid, and you also have the deferred tax, and then you bring them as one number called income tax expense. But when you go to the cash flow, actually the cash flow does that. This one does not show the details, but in the book that we provided, you can see that the numbers are different between what we have in the income statement and what is sitting in the cash flow statement. So the cash flow statement then shows you the true tax that you have paid. And then I will also respond to the issue of the proceeds on the sale of strategic stock. Yes, we did receive $280 million. That money is in a CFC account, the remittance account that you spoke about. So we keep it in dollars. Yes, the numbers that we have here, they are different. It's the issue of when did you do the conversion? So at year end, it was $3.38 billion. But you also raise an important question around why, if you take
that 280 matlab by the prevailing rate at the point was going to be 4 billion. Yeah. So what we have in the proceeds, so the amount linked to the 1.2 million barrels, which we call it unpumpable, so we cannot recognize that as revenue because we cannot deliver the product. So that's that difference. That's why when you just do history conversion, you see that you are not having all the your revenue is lower. But when you look at the cash that we have, we still have whatever we have received. So there is no issue, just how we account for it and how we reflect it. Actually, when you go to the SFF financials, there's a big number dealing with foreign exchange gains or losses, dealing with relating to this. And sitting in there, there's also something called fair value adjustment, which is like 725 million rand, which is just deals with the what is called unpumpable. So some of the amount is sitting in revenue and some of it is sitting in liabilities in SFF relating to the sale of strategic stock. But when you add both, you get to the same amount.
Yeah, okay. I'm sure Honorable Malem can follow up question. But CFO, I don't understand you. The unpumpable portion, what you people call the mud or something. But I don't understand. At the point of sale, so it's the same thing. So you minus that. So when government sells, so it will be the same thing. So why is it an issue now? Or at that time you sold it as if it's pumpable, and then now you realize it's not pumpable. What? How did you do that? I don't understand. Explain that. This was might have been said in the past, but I'm freshly shocked now. That you saying that at the point when, so you sold it, then you knew there was, in fact, it was 10.3 million barrels. So, and I can't remember how much of that was what you call the, was not pumpable. But you, 1.2, and you sold it as pumpable. Now that you've got to get your money back, now you've got to recognize that that portion is not pumpable. How did that happen? Or is this part of the investigation? Because I don't understand how is that. You can't have didn't know at the time.
Yeah,
that's okay.
Sounds similar. So, can you talk to that? Yeah. I agree. Chair, with your permission, the chair of SFF can explain it better, but when people do things that are illegal and in haste, this is what you get. But I think that the chair has got all the details, the chair of the
CFO, I'm sure the chair can answer that. Continue, sir. So you mean people were aware of what they were doing? Continue,
sir. Oh, you want
the chairperson? Okay.
Mumbati,
can speak.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Chair. In a nutshell, Chair, as the DDG says, things were done in a haste, so we oversold. We sold what we could not deliver. We knew that we had about 10.3 million barrels in the tanks. And those who sold did not make room
for what lies in the pipeline, which must maintain the actual ability of the oil to be pumped. So that vacuum that is being filled between the tank and the pipeline and the nozzle where it's delivered is about that, I think, 1.2 million barrels. So you can't pump it out. So we oversold, actually, the product. That is part of the investigation. Thanks, sir.
Okay.
I think I'm left with two questions. So there's one on the funding of the rehabilitation provision. So as we sit right now, Petros is not in a position to fund the rehabilitation provision. So they're underfunded by, in 5.7 billion rand. So that Petros can't fund it. But what we have in the interim, the funding of that provision has been deferred to 2024. So as we sit currently, we are compliant. But there's also another complication. Maybe the Petrosi colleagues can also assist. It depends on which methodology you are using to calculate the number. Because if you adopt the UK methodology, it gives you a different number. South Africa has not yet provide clarity on which method should be used to do the decommissioning. So I think the first part is to first bend down the issue of the methodology, which is what Petrol is going to do this year. And then after that, we can then say, how then do we fund this number? But currently, the number keeps on changing. I think in the past, we had it close to 10. Now it's around 8.8 billion. So that number changes because of the issue of the methodology, but that will be resolved. And then there was an issue of the profit. I think I will answer a bit to it, and then Mr. Makanya will answer the other part. I think it is slide 20. So slide 20, when we say we have improved, what has happened mainly is I will just refer to the line. So in 20, there is a line called the GP margin. So in the past, we were getting 5% profit margin. Now we got 10%. And the main reason for that is, one, the oil price moved in our favor. The second part, Petro is the South Africa. They bought product at some point at a lower price, and then when they had to process it, the price had moved up. So that's what happened around the margins, what drove the performance. But the other metrics in terms of production or sales, so sales particularly, sales are the same. Last year, 2017 and 2018, they are the same. AE, the coal sales are the same. But what has happened in AE, they then bought a company called Chiropsip. So that entity then helped to lift the profit. But we don't, because we don't own 100%, we don't show its volume. We only show our portion of the profit that comes in. So that's also why what happened in terms of the financial ratios. And SFF, I think nothing, in terms of performance, the performance did not improve. Because if you really look at the tanks that we have rented, which is line number 2, so the other year, 93% was rented out. In 2018, it's 71%, so it's lower. So, but I think the main driver for this performance is mainly the macroeconomic factors, and also PetroSA tried to control some of their costs, especially the general overheads.
list, we still have many questions. The SFF chairperson.
Thank you, Chair. You asked a very pertinent question, Chair, when you indicated, Honorable Chair, the reports. Have you received the reports that you are referring to? And you are relating to two reports, which the presentation covered. You would recall, Honorable Chair, that one of the outstanding reports, which was recommended by the initial report of Ellen Overy, was that the SFF, together with SEF, must conduct a forensic audit. We just commenced quite well. We called a draft in December, but unfortunately the two boards jointly sitting had to refer the report back because there was a problem that I think three individuals who were quite central were not interviewed. According to the forensic team, they could not find them, and the board rejected the reason that they could not be found because everybody knew where they are. We send the report back to them so that they can complete the investigation and then bring it back. But the report was almost 90% complete. We have not yet even favored the shareholder with the report because it was incomplete. But we have received the first and the second draft. It also impacted on the question of the delay of the court case process, because one of the recommendations on our side was that we must finalize the forensic report. The law enforcement agencies, they are hard at work. We are close to concluding the criminal aspect of it. Some of the board members, current serving board members, including the chair, have already delivered the affidavit, Honorable Chair. I was supposed to have been interviewed by the law enforcement agencies on Monday, but it got postponed to tomorrow. So they are dealing with the matter at a criminal level. We want to believe and we hope that very soon the issue will go to court on a total different level, not the settlement issue, but on a criminality aspect. Thank you, Chair.
Chair, there was a hand. Was it you, Chair, it was in relation to the Total gas matter, so that maybe we, with your permission, we can get PASA, the CEO of PASA, to respond. I think the question was around the impact of that for the country.
Okay, CEO, go ahead.
Yes, Chair. I was
interested to find out, so I can answer the impression of that on the fund and the customer. I was interested to find, where were they? Okay, but go ahead, answer the one part.
If I may attempt to answer the...
Because when you don't deal with these matters sufficiently, because a while ago people will remember that as we're dealing with the Equity project, people were explaining to us the drilling, horizontal, vertical things, and then so people, at that time, there were things in the air that no, these people are abandoning this thing, they're going to give it to other people to continue. So when you don't deal with those matters sufficiently, so when this happens, oh yeah, are these the people they gave the thing that they didn't complete?
So that's why information has got to be sufficient, because otherwise it plays into the things that are being said in the public space that may be wrong. See you.
Thank you, Chair. I think the question that I recorded in terms of the total fines, how come PetroSA didn't make that fine? The DDG responded to that. The reason why PetroSA was in a position that it was in terms of losing that fine is the nature of the project. That when you do the geological and the physical activities, at some point in time, if you don't find anything, there will be definitely a loss of the revenue that will go into that. And then I would like to also add to the fact that currently what we have actually read is that Total made a fine. But Total didn't just do the fine. Now in South Africa, they have also experienced what PetroSA has actually experienced in terms of drilling a dry well. So the information that we have received in terms of them drilling that fine, they have actually used around $400 million as a commitment to that fine. So if nothing happened or if there was no success, they were still going to be in the same position as PetroSA, if by a stretch of luck that they managed to get something out of it.
Yeah. You see what I was saying, Mr. Mokube? So if these things are in the public domain, so you can show. You know, because there was a huge outcry. Partly in the what the PetroSA did, there were errors, as you say. So it was a function of errors, but it was also in the nature of the operation. So if you can show, no, but this is what we did, and you can show, no. But we can show you Company B, Company C, Company D, in terms of information that is in the public domain, what has happened, what they have tried to do, how much losses they suffered. So it's not just a PetroSA unique phenomenon. So those things have got to be explained so that we can make a distinction between objective difficulties and subjective errors. Otherwise, we lump the things together. And so people think, these people threw public money, 15 billion. So now, who can show that? No, in fact, other people, if it, objectively speaking, they would have spent more money than PetroSA did. So I think that you've got to give sufficient information, because it is accounting, but it's also educating. Honorable Mabunda says that it is 1 o'clock and that the remaining questions must be forwarded to members in writing. I have no right to eat into his lunch time, so I am inclined to accept his suggestion. Can you pass this message to the Minister of Energy? I know you said many things, macro-organization, it's the election time, we don't know what's going to happen after elections, but is the Minister of Energy. There is a case. You know that thing that was called in the House the Chief Restructuring Office? There's a case for it here. No, I mean, I'm just using that term, but I want to show you that it's conceptual, that if we continue with the same self-board in the same way we've been doing, I can tell you that you're going to come to another committee in the sixth parliament and repeat the things you've told us, and the composition of the committee would have probably changed, and then so people can't follow the things that have been said in the past. We're going to go down the road business as usual. So I want to say, DG, please, can you go speak to the minister to consider this, what's possible in law to not just to change composition of the self-board, but to give it a slightly different mandate about what they should do in the order of a chief restructuring office. I want the following things done, otherwise they will not. These things will not be done. Because you put a board in place, and then they simply continue with business as usual like another board would have done. And I'm saying, with regard to the restructuring of SAF itself, because you are a holding company, that's not really a holding company. So you must address that issue in a serious way. And then so that you can also deal with the subsidiaries, the restructuring or turnaround plans of the subsidiaries properly. At this stage, we're really much in time. We're not handling this matter as an emergency. It is an emergency in the order of ESCOM, this thing. It's just that we can't see load shedding. We've got to address this thing, DG. So otherwise, you see, I'll feel for the next committee like I feel for us. Now, it is 5 years. We've been dealing with these things. And I accept the fact that the changes in the executive were not helpful to what we should do. We made this point last time. Every organization, if you do that, you're going to have problems. So whether it's executive management or at the political level, you're going to have problems. So we need that. That part we need. But please, you can't continue doing the same things and expect different results. Please, man. You need something. You need to give the SAF board a different mandate. And Honorable Melham, so are you opposed to Honorable Mabunda's proposal?
Chairperson, I am, actually, because there's a lot still to be covered, and I think it's not...
It is 1 o'clock.
No, I accept that, Chair, but as I said, there's a lot of issues here that haven't been unpacked. And I want to make a proposal that going forward, we deal with the different subsidiaries individually. Because we've heard a little bit about this and a little bit about that, and it's cherry-picking at the highest level, and we've heard a lot of waffle and a lot of spin that makes it sound better than it is. And you've touched on it. It's a crisis, and we're not dealing with the underlying issues here. I mean, I still haven't got an answer about the time frame on the SFF court case. I haven't got an answer about the board, the dysfunctional board at SFF. I haven't got an answer about the acting CEOs at SFF and CEF. So these are questions that I want the answer, and I'm sure the public out there want the answer to, and if we are to do our job properly, we must be allowed to ask those questions. So what I'm proposing is that going forward, we deal with each subsidiary and entity individually. So we deal with SFF by itself. We deal with Petro SA by itself. And then we come back and we deal with the CEF as an overview after we've dealt with all the individual sub-entities.
Agreed. We have no... Okay, Honorable Milham, I accept that. But you would understand what we're doing. Remember, we received the annual report of DOE, and ordinarily what we then do each year is to look at the big subsidiaries and call them to give us annual report as. But
like
no, they are, and we all know that. So I just explain. So what you're suggesting is quite in order. So in future, we can call each one of them separately so that we can deal with the matters sufficiently. Accept that. So the next committee will attend to that. Because Honorable Ambassador says that the house is rising. In fact, I'm told we'll be dissolved. When you took the resolution to dissolve us, I was very unhappy that you dissolved us. Yeah, but then the house will rise. Truly speaking, the house will rise on the 20th. So we will not be able to come back to this matter. I did indicate last week that we're finalizing the legacy report, so those things the next committee will look at so it can take forward the issues that are outstanding.
But, Sef, you were very lucky to have survived that indeed. So, you did very well. So, but then, please submit the list of the answers to the list of questions that are outstanding. Can't run through them. According to my list here, we've just done about 50%. So, submit them, and you can speak to Mr. Porter just to make sure that you answered all the questions that members asked. So I think that we should adjourn at this point. Another matter, it's 10 past 1, so we...
No, it's not a question to say when are we...
No. No, Matala, microphone.
Chair, sorry. I'm saying when are we expecting these answers from the department and the entity to Honorable Secretary of the committee here, because we want them. Today is Monday, it's Tuesday. We can have the list by Friday.
Yeah.
So we don't have to leave.
That's
them
a
to
good
the
suggestion.
Next, committee.
That's a very good suggestion,
yes.
Honorable
Sure.
Matthew. We'll have the council will get the answers by Friday. No, they will be sent to you. Just send the answers to Mr. Court. Otherwise, this looks like our last meeting. The court, if we meet next week, it will be our own small meeting to look at other matters. And I'm saying if. But an open committee meeting, this looks like our last meeting. And thank you very much for coming, sir. We are a very large delegation, so we... We can stop here. Thank you very much for coming. So, I'm sure you have taken, you have heard the questions, you have taken the comments to heart, so, and there's nothing personal about any of the individuals present here, but we've got to do something about those stakeholders, entities. So, good luck as you report to the next Portfolio Committee on Energy of the 6th Parliament. So, DG, do you want, you really feel that you must say something to this last meeting of the Portfolio Committee?
Yes, I do, Chair.
Go ahead.
Chair, I would like to thank the committee for the future administration on behalf of the department in the absence of my Honorable Minister who requested me and my team to be here. I think it's been a very interesting period, but most importantly, I'd like to thank you for the leadership and the guidance in terms of your oversight that you have provided to the entire Department of Energy, obviously to its companies that work under us. We really appreciated your leadership and your guidance, and we'll make it a point that your guidance and some of the outstanding matters that are still with us are attended. It's not the end of the road. We're looking forward to work with you in the future in your different portfolios, if you may not be in the same committee. But we'd like to express our sincere gratitude for the leadership that you have provided during the oversight period on the fifth administration of our government. Thank you very much, Chair, and the honorable members.
Thanks, DG. Honorable Matana, what's happening now? No, I want to thank the members of the public who were here. Many of you have been have been permanent members of this committee. So thank you for your time for being here throughout this term. And thank
thanks to members of the media, those who have been very regular and been very kind to the committee. Yeah, they have been very kind to the committee. There were times when we have had very serious difficulties. I think they have been very kind in communicating information in a kind of as objective a manner as possible. So, thanks a lot. The departmental officials, those who are here, DG, your people, so they always come here. So, thanks very much. We did thank Mr. Kose last time. There was one person who was saying that he's been very efficient. I'm not too sure, but he thanked him on our behalf. The rest of the members of the committee, our support staff, thanks very much for the support you've given to the committee. So, goodbye. This is our last meeting. Self and the group, the work continues. Honorable Masala thinks he'll be in this committee in 4 months' time. So he says he'll see you here. Thanks. The meeting is adjourned.
I don't think it would be. I can't go mad now.